let this be a normal field trip?
With a friend?
No way!
Cruising on down Main Street, you're relaxed and feeling good. Yeah. Next thing that you know, you'll see it. Octopus
in my neighborhood. It's funny because as, like, in the very first pages of this book, my brain, for some reason, went to, like, if there was an Animorphs movie or TV show, would it be made contemporaneously? And would it take place now? Or would it have to take place in the 90s? And then, like, 30 seconds later, someone took a picture of them on a disposable camera, and they're like, we need to get that camera before the film is developed. And I was like, well, there is my answer. It could only be in the 90s.
Yeah, I was reading along and thinking, I say this every time, but this is, like, maybe the most 90s book. Because disposable cameras were, like, a thing, a very big thing, mm-hmm. for a brief flashing moment, mm-hmm. and they are simply just not a thing anymore.
No.
Like, that's not an existential threat.
No.
The existential threat is, yeah, you couldn't make Animorphs now. It would be very difficult, I think, to say, oh, this, you know, the amount of, like, crazy shit that gets live streamed to Facebook,
yes.
in real time,
yes.
like, no, oh, the Earth invasion will be, is probably already happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Animorphs would have, like, no secrecy, like, and also, like, they couldn't morph, like, they couldn't use their cell phones anyway, like, so cell phones would be, like, a challenge for them externally, like, that would be an obstacle that everyone else would be using against them, but Animorphs themselves couldn't use cell phones for their own benefit, because what do they do with them when they morph, like? Give them all to Marco to hold, like, as a gorilla.
I will say that workout gear has come a long way, and most, like, jogging pants now have a cell phone pocket.
That is true.
The actual device.
And the Animorphs would blend in better because athleisure wear is, like, a normal thing for people to wear now. All that spandex would no longer be, like, really out of place.
Yeah, everybody would just think that Rachel is, like, a yoga nut who's mm-hmm. on her way to probably her fifth, you know, hot yoga session of the day.
Rachel would hate yoga.
Rachel would absolutely hate yoga. But, yeah, I think that, I mean, if somebody was going to adapt it seriously now, it would have to be a period piece. And as much as I hate referring to 90s media as a period piece, that's what it is.
That's sobering.
And I don't think I've seen any, you know, fan creations or opinions that anybody would want it to be made as a contemporary show.
Mm. It is very much of its time, even though, this is a very dumb thing to say, but even though it was written to be contemporary, like, I don't think it was, like, and I don't know, you could argue, I guess, that nothing, I don't know, that certain things are timeless on purpose, that they're just like, oh, well, like, this is just now, just by default, instead of, like, this is a purposeful decision to, like, make this now. But I don't know, I guess that by just defaulting, you're still, eventually it will be a period piece because of time.
Like, everyone, you know, you're supposed to consider The Catcher in the Rye as, like, this timeless piece of literature about, like, coming of age and, you know, the teen mindset. And as a teenager, you read it and you're supposed to be able to relate to, like, the emotion in it, which I think is still true and will, like, stay being true to a certain extent for certain types of teenagers. But when you're, like, reading it in actuality, it has all these cultural, like, reference points that I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. There's all, like, you know, there's name dropping of, like, brands and you know, entertainment figures. And because, you know, Holden is just, like, living his life, which is fine.
Yeah.
But you can't pretend that it's timeless.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff that just goes over your head.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can argue about whether or not it's worth it and whether or not, like, the quality makes it something that transcends its time.
Well, and it's interesting also because I feel like in that time period, in the, like, post-World War II, or I don't know, maybe even before, I'm not, like, super well-read on this front, but it's sort of, like, the modern novels that come out and the modern statement that's being made is, like, one of disillusionment and, like, you know, what happens if, and, like, disillusionment with technology and, like, society and corporations and, like, all of those themes that I think emerged in the 20th century that are still playing out in literature today and in, like, media today. I feel like there are messages that are still relevant today. And part of me wonders, like, when that, I don't know, what the, if you zoom out, what the pendulum will do, or what the trajectory of, like, art and, like, the prevailing messages about the world that we live in, like, when it will change. Because if it's, it's not exactly the same, but as you say, like, a lot of the themes in Catcher in the Rye are still relevant today, even in a slightly different context. And, like, it's been, what, 60 years? 70 years? Sometime?
I think it would be very easy to make an Animorphs show or movie and have it be, you know, topical and feel current, obviously, for lots of reasons that we've discussed, and still have it be a period piece. And, you know, that would be, I think, ideal for most people who enjoy the series, to see that particular time period captured and then set against the current time period, to see what has changed and what is constant. Like, the previous book has, you know, a 9/11 reference point that hadn't happened yet.
Oh, like, yeah.
Do you keep that?
These are all good questions.
And, you know, there's an ongoing conversation among, specifically, I think, people who make literature for teens and kids, as to whether you should consciously try to create something that is, air quote, timeless. And, you know, things move so quickly now. If you put Instagram in your book 3 years from now when your book is published, I don't know if Instagram will be here. It probably will be, because it's very popular, but it may not have the same impact. Mm-mm. And the kids, whoever they are, may not be using it. I actually don't know what the kids are using, if they're, like, doing Snapchat still, or this fake Insta thing that makes me feel very old and boring.
Mm-hmm.
And, same. Like, honestly, I don't come down on the side of you should avoid this, and you should avoid trying to write a contemporary story in a contemporary time, because it's going to be dated within, you know, by the time it hits the shelves, basically. I don't care.
You can avoid that. Like, how do you work around that?
It, and if you avoid it to a fault, then you've created something that's totally rootless, and it probably isn't going to speak to anyone.
Yeah. And so, at a certain point, like, also, like, 20 years from now, people are going to read it and be like, oh, man, like, Facebook, remember that? Like,
yeah, hopefully. Hopefully Facebook will be gone in 20 years. It'll be a relic of a particular time. It'll be great.
We have defeated the evil. It is interesting, I think, because part of what, so Animorphs, the fact that it can't be extricated from the 90s is interesting, because I feel like part of what people have maybe not taken as seriously about it is the fact that it's from the 90s. And I don't know if that has to do with, like, bad special effects. And then that, like, raises the question of, like, if you did an Animorphs movie or TV series now, like, would you completely take advantage of the fact that we have amazing effects now, kind of like the Star Wars prequels, dare I compare it to that? Or do you still kind of do it with some of the methods that would have been done in the 90s, or maybe even a little bit pre-computer, where you would suggest, like, morphing? Like, could you get people to take it seriously if you leaned completely into the technology, or if you avoid it? I don't know. I'm curious how you would play out the VFX.
I think there's an argument to be made for either, because it's really easy to imagine, like, a slick, impressive Netflix show, maybe, like, in the vein of Stranger Things, or maybe even by the same team who did Stranger Things, although, you know, I have caveats for that.
Sure.
Or the Clever Man people. Okay. I feel like the only person who watched Clever Man, but I really liked it. And it has, you know, things that reminded me a lot of Animorphs. And so, yeah, I think you could make a show that utilize the full extent of what filmmakers have at their disposal now. Or you could make Jurassic Park. And that would be good.
Either one.
You could make an original Star Wars film.
Yeah.
I think it would be equally good in different ways. Or you could super lean into 90s and try to make something that is kind of in line with the Animorphs TV show.
Oh my god.
But you would have to have exactly the right person do that, because they would either come off really slick, smug and ironic, which is not what I think should happen.
Right.
Or it would just be bad.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is, like, people, like, the thing that is so known about Animorphs nowadays is the covers, and like the fact that the covers are sort of like proto CG, like superimposition of Photoshop.
That is sort of divorced from its origin now.
Yeah.
There's been such a wave of recent, like, very brief, kind of cursory, in my opinion, small think pieces from, like, The Verge and other media websites about, like, oh, I hadn't thought about this series in years, or, like, I didn't read it at the time, but it's interesting to me now. And I'm like, all right, I mean, are you offering anything new? There are people who have been thinking about this literally since they were 10. And I don't think that there's any kind of ironic distance that is required to appreciate it as an adult. I mean, just because obviously you're not being ironic about something doesn't mean that you aren't, like, acknowledging its flaws necessarily. I mean, obviously this is not a perfect piece of literature.
True.
But it's, you know, there's no reason to step back from saying, I enjoy this, and I think it's good, and, okay, it'll take you an hour to read one of the books, maybe, and the covers are what they are. But, yeah, I don't know. I've been annoyed by the last several, like, instances of Animorphs on Twitter, basically.
Oh, no. Animorphs on Twitter, TM.
Yeah, because, I mean, it really is not ever... Because, as far as I know, it has a fairly active fandom for something that is not alive in a media sense.
Mm-hmm. That is, yeah, it does not exist in many formats.
Somehow, these media sites never find those people to, like, write about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, like, because obviously we have been taking Animorph seriously since the age of 10. All earnestness have been talking about this book series for years now. But it's interesting, like, I don't know, because at first when I started talking about, I was trying to make a point that, like, it was the 90s that, like, now people don't take it seriously or overlook it, or it's like a meme. But I don't know if that's true, if it's the 90s aspect, or if it's because it's YA, or if it's just, I don't know what the pall is over Animorphs that makes it a little bit, like, considered, like, cheesy or, like, not taken seriously. And then on the flip side of that, you have people who love it in all earnestness who then just are like, but you guys, like, in this book series, there's, like, war, and, like, somebody gets, like, almost trapped in the mind of, like, I don't know, all the things, like, really horrific things that happen. Just to be like, you think it's, like, cheesy CG, but instead it's, like, about, like, preteens with PTSD.
Yeah, that's the recurring on Tumblr theme of, like, oh, I was, you know, the original post being, like, I remember these from the 90s, basically, from my childhood. What were they actually about, I think? And then it just kind of spirals from there, and everyone adds on, like, the most horrifying or wackiest plot lines they can think of. Which is not difficult to do in either direction. Like, it's very easy to stun people.
We have both of those things in the book we just read. Like, but, fairly wacky, fairly horrific.
Yes, definitely. I don't know. I think maybe the reason that it... I don't know. I do think that it's kind of multi-pronged. It came out at the wrong time.
Mm.
Before the YA boom. In theory, if it came out 10 years later, it would have been Hunger Games instead of Hunger Games. You know, things like that.
Mm.
And, you know, it wasn't marketed toward teenagers. Which is probably inappropriate. It is middle grade. You know, they're on the spinner rack in the library that I work in the juvenile still. Mm. And every time I shelve them, I'm like, wow, A, the new covers suck.
Mm.
Like, they did not really, I don't think, work to try to attract readers, because they're not any better than the originals. They're just cheesy in a different way. Lenticular covers are weird.
Mm.
And not super attractive, and they give me a headache.
Mm.
And then B, hey, these are still here where they were when I was 10 and 11 and 12. Should I suggest that we move them to teen? That's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. They're J forever.
Yeah. Well, and it's the issue. I mean, yeah, if you were to adapt this to a TV series or movie, like, genre is a tough thing to figure out. Like, what is the tone? What is the genre? How do you... And the things that make it really great, like the fact that there is such, like, complex drama and, like, complicated human elements and stuff like that, alongside, like, Marco making, like Xena the Warrior Princess jokes, or like Axe freaking out over cinnamon buns because he's an alien who normally eats with his feet. Like, how do you balance? Like, can you take that and translate that successfully into like the variety of like tones and genres that the book series sort of cover under the umbrella of science fiction?
It wouldn't be an enviable job to have to like edit such a big series that spans years and watches characters grow into presumably a, what, 10 or 13 episode television series. Even if you had multiple seasons, like, yeah, I mean, they start off and they're probably 12 years old, and it ends when they're like 16. And so, you know, do you get really like film naturalistic and cast age-appropriate actors and, like, shoot it over a long term? That would be cool, but would cost way too much money.
Yeah.
Do you just age everything up and, like, compress the timeline? That's probably what would happen.
Yeah. And part of it...
Because number one, Hunger Games, the films were coming out, and somebody... there was, like, a post about the actors as they looked in the film and, like, in... you know, on the press junket, as opposed to what they looked like when they were, like, the age of the characters.
Oh,
and everybody was, like, super horrified.
Yes.
That's the point. Like, yeah, they should have cast 15-year-olds for this and not 21-year-olds, because that's what teenagers look like. They have baby faces. It's, like, really fucked up.
Yeah. How old are the Stranger Things kids, and how old are they supposed to be in the first season?
I feel like the actual kid actors... not the older siblings, obviously, who are in their 20s, I think. But the actual child actors, I'm pretty sure, were fairly close to the ages they were supposed to be. They're like in middle school, I think.
Right.
Yeah, so they're like Animorphs age.
Right. So there's Animorphs,
they all did a bang-up job.
Like, there's a precursor of success that, like, you could potentially, like, pitch the idea of not going, like, full Riverdale and instead... having, like, age-appropriate middle schoolers be on screen and be, like, appealing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of me also thinks it would be easier to condense it into one season rather than spread it out. Although I suppose the long game effect of the narrative would work better spread out. But then also, like, I don't know, would you still include, like, one-off, like, bottle episodes, like, number 42 here? And then have the critics be like, why is this here? Like, this is not at all, like, in the thrust of trauma delivering us to the final episode.
Yeah, I think it would be a question of, like, what is the core of the series? And, you know, the core is the war plotline. And so you would lose a lot of, I mean, yeah, okay, you can argue that the Cow book and this particular book don't, or Deep Sea Atlantis weirdness book don't, like, add anything to that plotline. But they add something to, like, the universe of Animorphs itself. And, of course, you know, there's all the Chronicles books.
Yeah.
Which is probably why we might not ever see, like, a real adaptation of this particular property. It is really hard sci-fi. Like, there are a lot of aliens. And I don't know if aliens are cool anymore.
That's a good point. It's amazing,
like,
how
much...
most of
the outer space shows are, you know, Star Trek-y, and that the aliens are all fairly humanoid.
Yeah.
And most of the concerns are, you know, humans traveling, not necessarily humans on Earth. And if it is an invasion story, then, like, what was it, V? That they remade a while ago?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't succeed, and I don't know why. I didn't see it.
I think I watched long enough for Elizabeth Mitchell in it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only reason why I watched that. I was on a post-Lost.
But, like, Animorphs has, like, a variety of non-humanoid aliens.
Yeah.
Who, you know, all have their own shit going on. And how do you shoot a picture of the Yurk Pool and be like, yeah, and these sentient beings have compelling, rich inner lives. Outside of, you know, their relationship to humans as,
that,
you know,
is
an enslaved species.
Oh man, these are such good questions though. And, like, even though all of these things are really hard, like, if someone was like, do you want to try and, like, map out an Animorph series, I would be like, yes, like, I want to get elbow deep in all of these, like, problems of just, like, and it's really dumb because you were saying, like honestly, when I thought about, like, trying to make this into a TV series, I only thought about the kids and I did not think about how many aliens are in it. And, like, even in this book, I gave up, like, halfway through trying to figure out what the Helmicrons look like. I'm like, marble eyes that are, like, diamonds, and they have, like, weird-shaped, like, triangle heads, but they're two-dimensional. I don't know. I don't care. Like, trying to imagine that is, like, not really what I'm there for. But I think, like, to a certain degree, like, Helmicrons or whatever, like, in my head, they just look like Lego people, which is not, like...
No, that's useful, because I don't know what they look like either. And it's not like I've ever seen fan art for them the way you see, you know, Andalites and Horkbajir and even Yurks to some sometimes. I don't know what the Helmicrons look like.
In my head, they're Lego people, which is, like, not helpful.
That's what we're going so small. With, Legos.
Well, and it's, I think, like, the cover art, like, you know, on the inside, whatchacallit, like, on that book with Jake, I think, like, and when he turns into a tiger, I think their world looks kind of Lego-y. So then the fact that they're small, I'm just like, well, then fine, they're Lego people in my head.
Plus, in this book, they show up in a Barbie, like, dream car. So it just seemed, like, very appropriate for, yeah, it's probably, like, another 90s toy. That's what they look like. They're, this is just the 90s episode, basically.
Exactly. But the question of, like, so, like, you could fudge Helmicrons, and you could fudge a lot of the, like, aliens of the week, even though in Animorphs, aliens recur. But, like, Andalites, you cannot fudge. You need to have a good Andalite CG design. And we talked earlier about, like, could you get away with, like, not doing a lot of CG? How would you do Axe? Like, you have to have, like, something.
Yeah, Axe is important. He's there a lot of the time.
Yes. And, like, Horkbajir, like, that's all you would also need.
The entire colony is, I feel like, a heart plot point where that you couldn't ignore, because they're related to Tobias's development, particularly. And you wouldn't be able to do a lot of the trippier stuff.
Yeah. And I think, I wonder if that's also what makes people check out a little bit, is like the trippier stuff that doesn't have, like, sort of an emotional home base, or even just a visual home base for people, where they're just like, well, so he's like a blue deer with a tail and stock eyes. Like, would there ever be a situation where, like, you could design, I feel like it's possible, but it just seems hard to design an Andalite and render him, like, on the screen in a way that people would be able to engage with and, like, appreciate, and not just be like, well, that's a weird CG dinosaur deer.
Yeah, because, I mean, so much of the prequel era CGI and sci-fi films is just so distant.
Mm.
And that was, of course, a big part of why people didn't like the Star Wars prequels and didn't engage with them emotionally in a way that everybody had with the originals, is because you're looking at it and it's like, okay, I mean, this is impressive, but I don't feel like I can touch it.
Yeah, like, Natalie Portman's looking at a tennis ball on a stick, and I can tell.
And I think things have progressed both in terms of technology and in terms of what filmmakers think people want since then. But, like, this is what I'm afraid of. Think about Avatar. Such a big deal was made out of that film, and it made so much money, and it has no impact beyond that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's very easy to imagine Animorphs like that happening to it, because it is so different in a lot of ways, and has to be there, you know, anytime there's a battle sequence, there's at least two different kinds of aliens on the screen.
Yeah.
And plus, they fight a lot. Plus fighting these children.
Plus the animals. Like, how are you gonna like get a tiger to like rip out the throat of aliens on screen like every episode? Like, how? Oh, I take it all back. This has to be an animated show. That's basically what it comes down to.
Would be my preference would be,
yeah,
not necessarily an anime, but like maybe an anime influenced animated show.
Like Avatar, the other one, the good
Avatar.
Yeah,
like good Avatar.
We will. That's the spectrum. Like, we want to push Animorphs towards like Avatar the Last Airbender, the animated series, not Avatar the Last Airbender, the movie, or Avatar the Blue Things. Yeah. Well, and then I think it also gets, because Avatar The Last Airbender, the series, it also, like, those kids are young. Like, in Korra, they're, like, 16. But in like, Avatar, aside from the fact that Aang is technically, like, 112, he is, in fact, only, like, 12. And that lets you, I think, like, impact that. And I think you could get away with the tonal shifts more in animation.
Yeah. Like, Attack on Titan, super brutal, from what I understand. And it's about kids, you know.
Just like Universe.
There's much more of... There's a lot more leeway, I think, granted to animated shows, for better or worse. I mean, the DC animated shows have always trafficked in this, and Young Justice in particular is, I think, a good blueprint for an Animorphs animated show. And I've been waiting for Netflix to, like...
Call us?
Try its... Well, that. For a lot of things. But to try its hand at animated series or animated films.
Mm-hmm.
Animorphs could be your perfect first volley, guys.
It makes me wonder if K.A. Applegate has, like, if she's got a grip on the rights until people can sort of figure out what they would want to do to it, or if she's, like, willing, or, yeah, what the, what is the holdup? We are redoing everything from the 90s. Let's get with it.
Yes, the 90s are big. They've been big.
Exactly.
Although Netflix's 90s show didn't do well. Certainly not as well as their 80s show. Which is too bad, because Everything Sucks was really good.
See, I don't... That didn't even land with me. I didn't know that that was their 90s show.
I'm hoping that Pen 15 on Hulu is more successful and reminds people that, yes, it's not just Target who thinks that the 90s needs to come back. 90s media is very interesting to lots of people who are adults right now.
So. It's true. Take us back. Well, I guess we should talk about the actual book.
Perhaps.
It's interesting, though, that, like, that you saw the thing about, the Captain Marvel making somebody think that, the Animorphs should be made into a movie. And then also that, like, as I was reading this in the beginning, I was like, I don't know why exactly this makes me think that, like, this could be a movie or an episode of TV. There was something in the beginning that, like, oh, I think the visual of the Helmicrons coming in on a Barbie car. Like, I think that visual, like, could you imagine how hilarious that would be? Because those things make the most ridiculous noises. And so, like, to have that be the intro of just, like, you're in a group shot where you can't see the floor, and then you hear the just, like, and then, like, everybody looks, and it's, like, a bright pink, like, Barbie car coming in with, like, aliens that are tiny and threatening to, like, annihilate your species. Like, come on. How hilarious is that?
It's the perfect cold open.
It really is.
It, like, really is. There may not be a better one in any media. It's very, yeah, that appearance is cinematic, because it's so easy to imagine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this book has a lot of film and TV intentional references, because, of course, Marco talks about Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah.
I think, in Raquel Welch.
Yeah, very hot.
Who is very hot, still. And he also talks about the Magic School Bus.
Yeah.
Which I feel like, I don't know, I feel like Cassie is more of a Miss Frizzle.
I absolutely agree. Like, trying to imagine Rachel as Miss Frizzle, like, she does not have, like, the sense of, like, curiosity and, like, adventure.
Miss Frizzle has an animal friend. Cassie has lots of animal friends.
It's true. Cassie would just have a harder, I feel like Miss Frizzle's kookiness is not quite as there with Cassie, but her genuine love for, like, discovery and learning and, like, helping the kids would definitely be there with Cassie. And I feel like Cassie would have to maybe, like, learn how to, like, do the kook.
Cassie, you can be my Miss Frizzle.
She's still better than Rachel as a Miss Frizzle analog.
Yeah, Rachel would... She's way too stylish to wear any of that.
And she would terrify her children.
Yeah, I don't think she has quite a classroom presence.
Arnold would pee his pants every day. Arnold would not be okay with Rachel, Arnold, as a teacher.
Oh, God. It really does... It's heartwarming to see, you know, to work in the youth room of a public library and see how many 90s series are still really popular.
Mm-hmm.
Magic School Bus is one.
Aww.
Like, it's still very well utilized.
Make
the
mistakes. Get messy. These are still valuable aphorisms. They're not aphorisms. Pieces of advice.
This book is interesting in that it has a split narrative.
It does, and it's between Rachel and Marco, which is kind of out of necessity. And one thing, we've talked before about this in the past, and it's always interesting to me, is, like, is there anything about this book that, well, two questions. A, is there anything about this book that it has to be an Animorphs book? Because we've talked about, like, the underwater taxidermists. Like, no, that does not have to be an Animorphs book. There's nothing about it that says, like, this is Animorphs. This one, sure, fine. I feel like it passes. But I feel like, does this narrator have to be this narrator? Like, is there something about this book that, like, necessitates the narrator chosen? And I don't know that Rachel has to be the narrator of this book, or if there's anything that's like, oh yes, this is specifically important for Rachel. And I don't know that that necessarily means that, like, anybody else would be better, but having Rachel as a narrator just kind of made me go like, well, I guess, like,
I do think I would have picked a different narrator just because Rachel and Marco's monologuing can be similar.
That is, like, true.
They have fairly similar voices because they're kind of sarcastic and mean.
Yeah. Well, and they pointed out, like, they have several interactions that, like, make it, that draw attention to that, and they're, like, joking. And the, like, how she reacts when they think that he might be dead. Like, they go through the list of what everyone's doing and how, like, and they're trying to get him to come out of the morph, that he might be stuck as a roach. And, like, Tobias is pleading with him, and Cassie is, like, begging him, and Rachel's trying to make jokes. And it's like, well, that's what he would do in that situation. And so the ways in which they're very similar and different is pretty plain in this, but their voices are definitely similar.
Maybe that was intentional, but it seems like if it was intentional, and therefore if the author was trying to make some kind of a point, like, this is not the book to do that in.
Yeah.
Because it's not a particularly serious book otherwise.
No.
I mean, obviously you want Marco to live.
True.
You don't want, you know, his tiny invaders to, like, kill him from the inside. And eventually you don't want rabies to also kill him.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Also, I feel like rabies is a very 90s thing.
I'm curious about this opinion. Tell me your thoughts.
Like, of all the possible perils, I don't know if that's one anymore.
Yeah. It did feel like very weirdly Deus Ex Machina, or, like, Sixth Sense-y, like, and that style of storytelling also just being like, oh my god, you guys, like, it's amazing, like, if we hadn't done that, like, that he would, and I don't know, and that, like, Marco was already going crazy, and that's why he morphed the roach, because he was, like, losing his sense of judgment. I was a little bit like, all right, was like, he? Whatever. Like, I don't think that, like, and Rachel's, and that they, like, saw the, like, rabies bacterium in the, like, bloodstream. And, like, for Rachel to be the one, I don't know, all of that, I wasn't a big fan of the rabies thing. I was like, I feel like this had enough danger avoidance without, like, and all Marco almost got rabies from this random pit bull in this random apartment from these random people who took a disposable camera photo of them morphing, but that, like, never appear on screen, don't have any reason for why they did it. Like, that whole storyline was odd.
Yeah, I mean, at the outset you think there's two possible plot lines, really, because the opening battle sequence is they're trying to avert the possibility of portable Kendronas for, like, high-ranking Yurks, which, yes, mass-producing Kendronas, probably not great for the war effort, right?
Yes, and the fact that they haven't done that already also feels like the Yurk version of 90s. Like, if it were the Yurk version of today, they would have mastered that already.
Yes. You would think that a Yurk war machine would already have this, like, under control,
mm-hmm.
and it would be fairly common, because you invaded multiple planets successfully, mm-hmm. and you really only have, like, the big ones of your food source. I doubt it.
Yeah.
So that would be, you know, a possible plot for the book. And then the kid with the camera is the other obvious possible plot, and then neither of them is the plot.
No.
For no really good reason.
Bust in on a Barbie dream car.
Nose.
And then go up Marco's nose.
Honestly, I feel like some suspension of disbelief is required. Because if you see the rabies virus in his bloodstream and you see, like, antibodies, like, fighting it off and so forth, and, you know, blood cells doing their job, why wouldn't they fight the zillion other invaders in the body?
That's true. The actual,
like, 12
yeah.
other things that are foreign, that are not supposed to be there. And the body is kind of just, like, going about its business otherwise. Like, yeah, I mean, if you fell into somebody's stomach, you would be digested, but that's a passive, you know, reaction that just happens.
Yeah.
It's not, like, the body has identified viruses or other, you know, foreign cells and
like
done its job.
Yeah, the whole thing was, it was, yeah, wrapping your head around, like, what actually was happening was odd. And even just, like, imagining the scale of everything that, like, the Helmicrons, I guess we should maybe talk about the plot. So the unlikely plot that ended up being the plot was that the Helmicrons bust in on a Barbie dream car, and I forgot. So the last time they were there, they, like, needed to power up their ship with the blue cube, and apparently, like, I don't know. And so they let them do it and told them to go away, but now they're back and they want to recharge. And now the Helmicron males are trying to, like climb up the, like, ranks of society because, side note, happy Women's History Month, the Helmicron females are still the domineering ones of the species. So yeah, so they tell... Also, just the hijinks in this book are kind of ridiculous. In the midst of all of this, they're trying to get to the blue cube to, like, hide it from the Helmicrons, and Rachel and Marco both lunge for it. I think that's how it happens in the beginning, too. I know that's what they do in the end. But regardless, Rachel elbows Marco in the face and knocks him out, and then all of the Helmicrons just, like, crawl up his nose with only Tobias noticing. And so then they threaten to kill Marco. They're taking him hostage, and they're threatening to kill him if they don't surrender the blue cube. And so the Animorphs get Axe to, like, adjust the, like, shrinking ray on their tiny Helmicron aircraft with, like, the tiniest of instruments so that they can shrink themselves into tiny versions of themselves to make tiny versions of tigers and, you know, eagles and things to go inside Marco's body. But the Helmicron set a trap and set them to be, like, 1/100th of the size of Helmicrons. So then, like, they're even tinier in Marco's nose. And, like, I don't know. The whole thing is a little bit ludicrous.
I don't know. I feel like... I mean, as far as the aliens that we've met go, the Helmicrons are obviously the most ridiculous.
Yes.
And
intentionally, because the way they speak is hilarious and annoying.
Yes, the way they speak is... And, like, the probably my favorite part of this book is the excerpts from, like, the Helmicron blog.
Why are they there?
Like, not... That's all, like, it makes you think that a Helmicron is about to be narrating, which would be fun, but it's not what happens.
No.
You're like, how do we know this? Who has this information? Like, Rachel wouldn't have this. And even if she did, she wouldn't bother to communicate it because she thinks the Helmicrons are idiots.
Well, like, it makes me wonder, like, are they trying... Like, they could have maybe done something between... Like, if this were today, if we were making this today... This is actually a perfect example. If we were making this today in the context of today, but set in the 90s with this particular book, the subplot that would warrant having Marco and Rachel be the dual narrators would be about, like gender issues, and then the Helmicrons would come in and they're like the Helmicron females are basically all like Rachel's, and then you could sort of like make it so that like the Helmicron males were more like Marco's, and then have that like play out. Like, that's how I feel like that like TV episode would happen now.
God, I don't know if I like that. Because, yeah, I think in the first Helmicron book, like, that's what Marco says. He's like, oh, God, it's like an army of Rachels or something. And then, you know, the natural volley is that, okay, all these beta males are, like, an army of Marcos. Mm. Which, poor Marco. He has a rough day.
Marco's
a pretty bad day.
Exactly.
Like, although, I have to say, like, in the grand scheme of your, you know, your friends having to interact with you in a way that they maybe you would not prefer... Like, going literally inside someone's body isn't that weird. Because bodies are inside, they all look the same, more or less.
That's true. Yeah.
I think part of what made this kind of a weirdly difficult read is that so much of it has been, like, describing what Rachel is seeing as they're traveling Marco's esophagus.
It's like an anatomy lesson.
And it's supposed to... Yeah. It's supposed to... be, you know, a magic school bus-y type of close-up of, like, what, you know, blood cells and soft tissue and tongues look like. And so there's a giant chunk of description of something totally random before, you know, everybody figures out, like, oh, like, what it is. Like the mucus thing. I'm like, you're in his nose. What do you think it is?
Yeah.
That one was a gimme.
Yeah, I will say this book...
put it over a precipice and now it burns, you're probably in his stomach.
Yeah. I do remember, though, that this book taught me what a sphincter is. That was, like, a takeaway from this book when I was a kid. Helped me in anatomy class.
The other day at work, there was a red tailed hawk that was like just hanging outside. Mm. It was sitting in a tree.
He was surveying you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool. Usually they don't like chill for that long, that close to lots of human activity. And all of my coworkers were just like, we were just wasting time staring at this hawk and like talking about it. And at some point, somebody was like, I wonder how long they live. And I was like, I know the answer to that. Thanks, Tobias. Oh, yeah, 90% of my functional animal knowledge about either animal humans or animal animals probably comes from animorphs.
Thank God for Cassie, because Cassie's the one who the whole book is like, wait, let me think, like, if they cut their way out of Marco's stomach, like, where would they end up? Where are they going? Like, they, and the fact that, like, they are tiny sharks in his bloodstream is, like...
I don't remember why they thought that was a good idea.
I don't either. Rachel clearly didn't get a grip. Yes.
Like, why didn't you pick dolphins?
That's...
I mean, it was the breathing underwater thing, but, like...
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. They did at least acknowledge that and had Rachel freak out and bite Jake's tail off. So, like, before they even got out of the stomach. Well done.
Like I said, I just feel like... it was hard to feel an investment in the particular stakes of this book because while they're simultaneously very, very high, like they're high to a point where you can't really engage with them because it's like it's past a certain threshold of absurdity, I think.
Yeah. And plus, like you said, with the thing about Miss Frizzle and like, you know, the benefit of Magic School Bus is and learning about that is that you get to see it happening, and in the book it's just Rachel describing what she's seeing and you're like, this is not the medium for this. And the same thing as well, like anytime anything happened internally, like the you want to see what the result is externally or what caused it. Like if Marco, because when Marco sneezes, he like sneezes one of the Helmicrons out. And then, and when it reverted back to Marco's narration, I was like, well, I want to see where he sneezes. But they skipped it because the pacing is such that, like, too much is happening. You can't immediately, like, in a movie or a TV show, cut back and forth between what's happening internally and externally, which is, like, what Miss Frizzle does, or, like, Osmosis Jones, that, like, awful movie that we watched in anatomy class.
That's a great film.
I hate, there's, like, a massive barfing scene, so I think that's why I hated it.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I remember being, like, fun, though.
It probably was. Like,
being tricked into learning about science.
It probably was.
The whole point of 90s media, I feel like, for schools.
Well, and I remember as well, like, in anatomy, we watched, like, a video that, like, haunts me to this day, because there was a lady whose spleen was about to rupture, and they'd show an animation of the inside of her body, and, like, you know that the spleen is about to rupture, and then it cuts to her, and she's just, like, going about her daily life, and so as a viewer, you're like, your spleen is about to burst! And she has, like, no idea. And so I think, like, that style of, like, knowing what's happening internally while the person on the outside doesn't, like, I think is what this book needed, and also what terrifies me about health and the human body to this day.
And, like, the few times that is enacted in the book, it's sort of anticlimactic because, you know, when you're with Rachel and everybody and the Helmicrons inside and they're fighting and you're like, oh shit, they have like, you know, there are lasers in here, lasers. And then you forget that it's on a literally minuscule infinitesimal scale.
Yeah.
And then you cut the mark on, it's like, oh, he has a nosebleed. I'm like, he was shot with lasers and he has a nosebleed. Because, yeah, the scale is such that, yeah, okay. I mean, it would suck to have somebody punch a hole in your stomach, obviously. Yeah. But it's not the kind of thing that would kill you, necessarily.
Yeah, well, that's what the rabies is for.
Unless you got sepsis, like, really fast.
Yeah.
Which, that would be, I think, the main concern. And the thing with, like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, we shot our guns into, like, the lining of his nose, but since they're tiny guns...
Yeah.
I mean, his nosebleed, that sucks, but it's not life-threatening.
Yeah. Well, in the end, I feel like that's why they put the rabies in, because, like, Because then presumably, so Marco, when he comes home after trying to steal the disposable camera, he lies down because he, like, doesn't feel well and he feels, like, shaky and sweaty, I guess. And, like, it would be cool. I guess it's supposed to be the rabies setting in. I don't know. But, like, I think it would be cooler if, like, they weren't so small that, like, things that they were doing, like, did have some effect on him without, obviously, like, hurting him. And, like, the dog bite makes enough sense, I guess, because it's something that's dangerous enough for him when he's not morphing. But, like, anything else, like, once they're out of his body, he can morph and morph back and be fine.
Honestly, I'm not convinced that morphing would have killed them anyway. Because, yeah. I mean, for one thing, it doesn't.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, the entire earlier point established of, like, and make sure you don't morph, buddy.
Mm.
Is sort of killed, but in that case, like, a cockroach is probably the thing that I would absolutely pick for him to not morph, because they don't have blood the way a mammal does.
Gross.
And so anything that's in your bloodstream is, like, something is going to happen to it.
Yeah.
It's going to become probably super compressed. But if he morphed anything else, like, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Because they're apparently about the size of a dandruff flake.
Yeah.
For point of comparison.
Anytime the roach, when they talked about when he was morphing around them and everyone thing was turning into, like, the blue-white liquid, and I was like, gross. That's just what comes out of roaches when you kill them. That's disgusting. Like, I can't.
Like, I'm way too familiar with roaches for the roach stuff and animorphs to not really bother me now.
Yeah.
As a Floridian, that's my stance.
I had to, like, as I was reading,
they have to morph roaches.
The whole book, like, all of the, like, internal body processes and stuff, I had to sort of, like, eventually divorce myself from it, because as I was reading it, I was like, this is really gross. Like, I don't really want to, like, truly imagine any of this, like, which is another reason why it should be a cartoon.
Yeah. Honestly, if our dreams came true and somebody did make an animated series of this, I think that books like this, like the one-off books, should all be in, like, a different style.
Mm.
And this would be, like, a Magic School Bus-y style.
Interesting.
That would be ideal.
What else? What else happened in this book?
I mean, that is really about it.
That is really about it. At the end, like, Marco morphs a cockroach. The thing with the camera really bugs me. Like, what happened? They stole it, and then they destroyed it. They were like, we can't risk getting these developed to, like, see what they saw. It's like, well.
Okay. That was such, throwback. I don't know. The camera thing was such a throwback for me because, of course, my aunt and uncle used to want a Photoshop.
Mm.
Like, an actual photo space shop.
Yeah.
And, again, that's something that, you know, you don't see anymore.
You Nobody's don't think about it anymore.
On little film canisters being like, oh, man, I got to get this shit developed. And then. So many different plots from, like, TV and film just wouldn't work now.
Having there's instant a big camera.
Trope based around film being developed and then you find out something.
Yeah.
Because it's captured on film.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Everything's instant now. Well, and even, like, Marco breaking into that, like, I was like, there are cameras everywhere. Like, he would be seen. Like, there's no way that. And granted, it was, like, in a pretty rough part of town, so, like, they may not have had, like, a security system, but, like, I don't know, people now have cameras set up in their house for, like, watching their pets when they're on vacation, so.
Yeah, nanny cams.
Yeah.
And, like, closed circuit cameras are everywhere.
Mm. Yeah.
You definitely could not destroy a Books-A-Million and hope to get away with it.
No.
Even if you were a wolf at the time.
But it also begs the question if, like, with the amount of surveillance, I don't know, but, like, so we can kind of riddle out that, like, the Animorphs would not be successful in any of their missions in today's technology. Like, would the Yerks? Like, would the level of technology on, like, the human planet at this point, like, would the Yerk invasion still be doable?
I feel like I said earlier, that it probably would have been truncated.
Mm.
Because their entire, like, MO pretty much is covert, whereas the Animorphs' entire MO involves being very public a lot of the time.
Yes.
and trying to do things secretly in public places, like turn into animals.
Mm.
And so the minute that that is exposed, like, your entire war effort is gone. Yeah. Because up until fairly late in the series, it is just them doing crazy shit on TV. That, you know, the surrounding townspeople are not going to hear about until the nightly news.
Yeah. Whereas
now, you know,
that shit would go viral.
If I'm outside right now and did something weird in the middle of the street, before I got back inside, it would be on YouTube.
Yeah. There was one line of dialogue that really, really, really made me laugh. Which was, I was scrolling through the book, and, like, I was scrolling through the book. This is, that's embarrassing.
To be fair, you actually, just so we're clear, I do read most of the books on the computer, in a file.
I read them all in paperback form. I'm holding a paper book in my hand. Okay. Well, anyways.
Sorry for the call out.
That's okay. It needed calling out. I feel like it fits. It's in keeping with the, like, the time traveling. Are we 15 years ago or are we now? theme of our podcast. But I was realizing that the whole thing with the Helmicron females and the Helmicron males is, like, brought up just enough for you to be like, is this a point? And then it's not a point, including encompassing the excerpts from the diary. Like, you expect them to turn against each other or take each other out, and then the Animorphs will get off scot-free or something to happen with that conflict, and nothing really does.
Yeah, it's like the third of the possible plot lines that isn't the actual plot line.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Helmicrons, as established, they're always fighting with each other anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to have been stepped up since they got their feminist pep talk.
Yes.
And it hasn't really in any appreciable manner, because they're still fairly committed to, like, you know, finding the blue box and killing this horrible, warm-blooded, mucus-filled alien if necessary. Their absolute disgust at, like, having to navigate Marco is hilarious to me, because, like, you chose this, you assholes.
I know.
You brought this on yourself. You don't have to be knocking our air breathing, you know, capacity. It's not, it's just evolution, man.
Exactly. Not everybody can be Legos.
Yeah, not everyone can be completely formed of whatever it is that they're formed of.
Not a clue.
Helmicrons. But yeah, like, that's like the third of the, well, this is a hook. And then it's not a developed hook.
Yeah. Not so much. My favorite moment of comedy, like, I don't know why this really made me laugh, and I assume it's Rachel, because it sounds like something Marco would say, but I think at this point it has to be Rachel, because again, their dialogue is very overlapping in this one. But they went up his nose, and then the Helmicrons didn't notice them, and so everyone's like, what are they doing? Like, they're just standing there. And then Cassie says, like, consulting a map. And then I think Rachel says making dinner reservations. And, like, for some reason, that made me laugh so much.
It's, like, such a weird kind of dad joke.
It really is. Like, it's very weird.
I mean, Rachel likes to pretend that she's cool, but she does, is kind of like a dad joke.
A little bit, yeah.
Probably because of her dad.
Probably. Oh.
Although the thing that made me laugh the hardest and the thing that I remembered from this book was the line about popsicles.
I don't remember that.
It's like they're in the barn and they're looking in the freezer for the blue box.
Oh, yeah.
And Rachel's like, what exactly do you guys like? Why do you have a freezer, you know, in your barn? And Cassie's like, well, bodily fluids from animals, grubs, and popsicles. Dad loves grape. And I was like, oh, God. I mean, I know intellectually that there's nothing wrong with keeping food items in a space that's shared by grubs and bodily fluids, because popsicles are all contained in their own little, you know, wrapper.
And presumably the bodily fluids and grubs are also.
Yeah, they're not just, like, loose puddles of bodily fluid. But, yeah. That was, like, the only thing that I remembered from this book, other than, I think, the Raquel Welch thing. So.
I think I remembered Raquel Welch.
Takeaways for child me.
Mine were Raquel Welch and Sphincter. Those were my two.
Uh, Great.
What an educational experience for 13-year-old us. So I guess that does it for this little one-off. I guess it makes sense that this book we mostly just talk about how we want to make Animorphs into a TV show rather than how the Animorphs go up Marco's nose for a whole book.
It's what the Ghost Rider wanted.
It is what the Ghost Rider wanted.
They wrote a very, you know, very TV-ish book.
Yeah. But so in June 2000, The Test was published, which is the next book in our reread. It's narrated by Tobias. So it says, throughout the book, Tobias deals with the psychological after effects of the torture he endured at the hands of the sadistic subvisor Taylor.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to be excited by that, Tobias.
I know, but I just love that there was a sadistic subvisor named Taylor.
Which is a hugely 90s thing, too, I feel like, the evil mean girl.
Yes, yeah. Well, and also that she's sort of like the other side of the Rachel coin a little bit. I feel like I remember picking that up when we were reading the first Taylor.
Yeah, that was a satisfying reread.
It was. Hopefully this next one.
I really don't remember the context for this, like what Tobias is doing that he has to relive all of the terror.
Well, it says, as the book opens, Tobias discovers Bobby McIntyre, a missing child who was hiking through the woods. He leads the boy's father and a search party to his son. Sounds like a lot of Tobias identity.
It sounds like the Cassie Butterfly book.
Well, that's no journey through Marco's digestive system. Like, I feel like we're getting into maybe some more substance. We will be back to talk about The Test, number 43, and I guess know more about the sadistic subvisor Taylor. Until then, happy days.
Taylor.
Delightful. So strap your bones right to the seat. Come on in and don't be shy. Come on. Just to make your day complete. You might get back into a pile on a magic scuba. Step inside, it's a wild ride. Come on, ride.